Dear Summer, I know you gon' miss me. For we been together like Nike Airs and crisp tees. Estats with polo fleeces. Purple label shit with the logo secret. Give me a couple years, shit, I might just sneak in. A couple words and like peaches and herb. We'll be reunited and it feels so hood. How the whole world saying, how you still so good? Well, I do this in my slumber, Summer. I ain't none of these half-ass newcomers. You know how I do, Summer. I drop heat when you bring the sun up. The combo make niggas act up. I pick a gun up. Niggas back up. They know I'm not no fronter. I don't talk shit. I just flip an onion. Sorry, Lance. I'm just trying to advance my quotes. I ain't making you the butt of my jokes. But let's not stray from what I came to say to my beloved. Think we need some time away. They say if you love it, you should let it out. It's cage and fuck it. If it comes back, you know it's there to stay. It's tugging at my heart, but this time my part is needed from the public. Who should have gave me the politics? Instead gave me the
answer. Yo, welcome to the Cold World Podcast. How y'all been, B? How's the beginning of summer treating you? Is it alright? Is it everything you hoped it'd be? Or do you get depressed that you realize you ain't in school no more and you don't really get a break? And you see all these little kids running around happy. Do you get jealous of them? Are you mad at them? Does it bother you? You can tell me. It's okay. It's going to be a busy summer. I told you all what my summer plans were already. I'm just trying to make sure I'm writing more. Yo, I really want to get this book done. It is. I think it will be a beautiful thing once it is done. It's also like the bane of my existence at this point, right? Like, just the guilt I feel around not hitting that as hard as I want to. You know what I mean? It bothers me, man. But I made a big commitment, a big financial commitment. I want to get it done. At least have enough to where I can start putting it in front of people and getting the feedback and getting it edited and stuff. And I do think it's going to be dope to be able to sit down under the Eiffel with the Eiffel in view and just type. I think that's going to be crazy. That's some stuff. Like, I'm in this whole Nas got a song called Second Childhood. I guess, you know, growing up, it was just a lot of things that I didn't think that I'd ever be able to do. And, like, being able to fly to Paris is one of those things. You know what I mean? Like, when Jay-Z and Kanye made Niggas in Paris, I felt that I understand. Bruh, if you escape what I escaped, like, I get that song. Like, there are some songs that come out and you just feel it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, I knew what was going through that person's mind at that moment. And, you know, and it's funny because most of you that actually listen to this, you just know me from, like, my, you know, my adult years. You know what I mean? Like, man, growing up was crazy, and I'm sure it was crazy for a lot of people. So I still bug out when I get to do dope stuff. So that's the plan. And one of the ways I'm gonna help myself in writing that book is like talking through a lot of things that I'm gonna be writing about. So this is about the makings of a mindset. And my mindset is a peculiar one for a lot of people. And I say that because of the conversations I have with people, and they leave like cross-eyed, like they just like, what is he talking about? And so that's part of I think that's gonna make the book kind of dope. But so what I'm gonna do on this episode is I'm gonna talk about two of those things, but first I want to jump into some current events that have happened that have affected me. My hiatus from watching and enjoying the sport of basketball is still in effect. I went out and actually tried to run for the first time since surgery. Not on a treadmill, but actually around the lake. I finished. I didn't run the entire way. I did a combination of run and stop. The knee still hurts, but I was able to do more today than I've ever been able to do. So, you know, hopefully it gets to a place where I feel like it's stable and maybe I can get back on the court and go from side to side and do all that stuff. So we'll see. But I mean, it was a beautiful day in Oakland today, so I got to go do that. So I, you know, I'm happy. There's progress. It's slow progress, but there's progress. Another thing that has happened is my boy, my ace, my favorite player in this league, just got traded, Derrick Rose. Now, I don't care what you think about Derrick Rose. I know what that dude has meant to Chicago and, you know, and him leaving and going to New York. I mean, that was tough. I knew that there was talk about trading either him or Jimmy. I mean, I'm a big Derrick Rose fan, man. I hope and I pray that that dude stays healthy because he's just a phenomenal player and I think a phenomenal person. And so I'm really looking forward to rooting for him. I mean, everybody knows my team. I am a Bulls first person, Warriors second. I need to now add New York into that mix somewhere. And I'll never be a Knicks fan. Let me not lie to y'all. But I will be a Derrick Rose fan. I will want to see him do well. And as a diehard Chicagoan, like Chicago fan, like I love the Cubs. I love the Bulls. But I really want him to go for like 60 against the Bulls. Just because I felt the level of disrespect that he had. Now listen, this is where I get confused on stuff, right? So LeBron James makes a business decision, right? He leaves his hometown, he goes to Miami with a better team, better climate, just a better life. He is crucified by this league. He is evil. He is horrible. His jersey deserves to get burned. Derrick Rose, another son of the city, gives a ton of money to that city. Is just, you know, somebody out of Inglewood, somebody out of like the bottom of the bottom of the bottom that represents Chicago pretty well. He has some faux pas. He had a few moments where he spoke out of turn, but I think if both my legs got wrecked the way they did and the type of pressure I had, I think I'm deserved an opportunity to express some frustration. He get traded. Don't nothing happen to management. Ain't nobody yelling at them. Ain't nobody burning their suits or their ties. None of that. So let me tell you what that tells me as a young black man watching how things like this tend to unravel. Every time a young black man, and this could be for other people, but I'm talking from my perspective. But every time a young black man finds himself some agency and gets him some power and makes some demands, he's abusive, he's selfish, he's all these things. But when the company, when the business, when the organization makes a move detrimental to that young man, it's just business. Y'all, we got to get up out of that, man. And you got to be able to see that. Like, you got to be able to see that. I don't care how LeBron James said he was taking his talents to South Beach. He also gave a bunch of money to the Boys and Girls Club on that same day. You know who don't care that he, you know who is loving that he did it that way? Those kids that benefited that day. But it's just crazy how we write the narratives that we want to write. You feel me? So the other thing that's happened here is the Golden State Warriors were up 3-1 and they lost. They lost. Like I've been hearing people talk about the league is rigged. The NBA wanted the Cavs to win. Don't know why. Like as a fan, like even as like a Warriors fan, like y'all, this is the problem. See, this is the problem with bandwagon folks. Cause this is like the irony of this. The reason why this is some type of weird, horrible poetic justice is because just a few weeks ago, everybody around me was talking about how whack OKC was for blowing the 3-1 lead, how arrogant they were, all that stuff. We on a mission, this, that, and the third. Now, in that series, there were bad calls both ways again. But it wasn't the league wasn't rigged then when they made history. But you know what I mean? Like, it's, and then they got, everybody in Oakland got all those jokes off on OKC. I saw jokes about Kevin Durant's hair. I saw jokes around, like, Russell Westbrook and the way he mugs and how he plays. Like, y'all, there was no chill here in my hometown. And here in Oakland, there was no chill for OKC. Then we get into the finals. And when we went up, man, like them first two games and how they was basically blowouts, and folks was out here feeling themselves, smelling themselves, yo. Like, I would have thought that it was like Clay, Steph, and then Rich from around the corner out there shooting threes, the way these folks was out here like celebrating, right? Right? And then like folks got cocky and they got arrogant. And then Clay talking about LeBron and his feelings. And people start goating and poking at him and all that stuff. Like, that dude's not a scrub. He's not. He's still a freak of nature. And what happened? Them boys came back. We can talk about Draymond Green being gone. But you can't. Come on, man. Y'all had three games. Three. You lost three games in a row. And I think that the team is good enough and they'll be back. And I think they're going to attract another superstar. I think if KD goes to the Warriors, I mean, I just think that that's, I don't know, man. I this is a new era. I just think that's kind of whack. I just feel like when you was there, when you was right, like you was, he was right there with OKC. They just didn't close a deal. Get you a piece and go back, right? But I don't know, man. I don't know what these cats are going to do. You know what I'm saying? If he goes to New York, it'll be interesting to see New York be good again, because they ain't been good in my adult life. I mean, it'd be interesting, right? But y'all got to stop it with this whole conspiracy theory stuff, man. Y'all got to stop it. What happens is the Warriors live and die by the three. And you've got to see for a year and three-fourths of them just being able to, like, impose a will. And then they had a cold series. And the two-time MVP started clanking. Clank, clank, clank. For everybody else in the world, in the history of basketball, since the dang on sport was invented, the Warriors shoot bad shots. Let me be really clear, yo. Steph Curry, who is amazing and is like a work of art watching him play, those are bad shots for everybody else. But we got spoiled. You know what I mean? Like, we got spoiled. And they started clanking. And then you know what happened? They started to look like bad shots again. And the way that, I mean, Kyrie Irving, like, attacked Steph. I mean, he wanted Steph on him. Like, they ran plays to get screens so they can switch and have Steph on top, on Kyrie, guarding Kyrie. And that dude licked his chops every single time. I mean, it was a, listen, if they play two more games, it could go either way. I get it. I understand, man. And it's hard to lose. But just like the same way we expected other people to act when we beat them. Like, come on, man. Y'all got to stop this. This whole, I'm really, it's the game been over. It's days. It's a long time ago at this point. Like, stop with these conspiracy theories, B. Stop it. Stop that. Anyway. So the book Crack Baby Residue, The Makings of a Mindset, focuses on how a mindset is built. How did I start thinking and believing what I think and I believe, right? And I try to be somewhat, what's the word? I don't know, stern, disciplined with that. I don't know. But I mean, I guess I've created my own sort of dogma to drive me to success, right? And it's really unorthodox because I don't come from a cloth of, like, successful people. It's just the reality. And so two of the things I'm writing about, and I guess I can just speak through them here, is my lack of patience and my level of aggression. So, and they kind of go hand in hand. So let's start with the lack of patience. Like, I've been hearing my entire life, like, Charles, be patient. Charles, be patient. Charles, be patient. And I've every time I've taken that advice and listened, it has not worked out for me. It has just not worked out. Everything, for the most part, that I've been successful at, I've had to go out, force the issue, take, push, find a way into the back door if the front door was closed. And none of that stuff happens with me sitting around waiting and being patient. Like, I don't understand what that means. Also, not just when it comes to me, but also when it involves other people. So, for instance, I work with young folks. I've worked with kids my entire adult career. So when people say be patient, it's like, well, that's other people hanging in a balance. Like, they can't afford for me to be patient. And let's be real. Usually when white people or people in power tell poor people or brown people that they need to be patient, what they saying is not right now. And that not right now normally turns into never for you. Okay. How many broken promises have been made to poor people, black people, brown people? How many times has there been a budget item in this state where it's like, oh, well, we need to pay that back to those people. We got to put that money back into that next year. And then next year never comes. How many times is like, well, you know, this process is going to take X amount of years. But meanwhile, you got all these kids that's here right now that's still suffering and struggling. You feel what I'm saying? So, and let's look at my career. As a social worker, when I worked at Juma, when I worked at TFA, now that I work at the district. Like, there's always been this level of, all right, well, be patient, learn this and do this. And but I always did my best when I pushed the issue and I pushed the envelope. And I think that maybe it's because I do have a really unorthodox way that I entered all of those professions. Like, I didn't come in the traditional way in any of those jobs. You know what I'm saying? And I just think it's interesting. I do need to develop a level of patience. Like, listen, my lack of patience, like, the same things that make you laugh will make you cry, yo. Like, I am aware of that. I'm sure that my lack of patience has cost me a lot of things, coupled out with the level of aggression that I come with. But then you got to ask yourself, right? Are the things that I may have lost along the way worth more than the things that I've gained along the way, operating the way in which I operate, operating in the way that has pulled me essentially out of the hood, that's essentially pulled me out of poverty? Like, do I abandon that now? Is that what needs to happen? I don't know. This is a real question. Like, I am very aware that maybe the things that got me here won't keep me here or push me further. But I don't know. Like, I am like many people listening to this, like, I am a true pioneer for my family and for where I come from. So, like, there's no pedigree of college graduates, master's degree level, or executives in my family. No, man. The pedigree of my family is dope fiends, addicts, and criminals. Right? So, how do you tell somebody like me that grew up in the environment that I grew up in that only understands what he knows? I can't sit and wait. Like, I can't do it. And I think at some point, I mean, maybe that luck or whatever, maybe that style just will have to phase out, fizzle out or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you on that. But that's just me being honest. And I think that segues, and I talked a little bit about it in the lack of patience, but my level of aggression. Everything that I've accomplished, I've had to go get it. Everything. Everything. College, I had to go grab it. Success in school, I had to go grab it. Like, and I think that one of the things that you get, yo, there's a movie. I'm just quoting a whole bunch of hood movies here, but that has Beanie Siegel in it. And I think it's State Property. And he got this line, like, you're going to get down and lay down. Like, and it makes sense. Listen, man, I ain't never sold drugs a day in my life. I am the furthest thing from a thug, all that. But I learned very quickly that the people in my neighborhood, Chicago, Oakland, wherever, the people that did well there, they went out and they took what they needed. And they built that so then they could achieve what they wanted. So some of the things that I've taken since I was in high school are mentors. Like, I'm just, if I like you, if I see you, if I saw you and you did something remotely close to what I wanted to do, like, I took you as a mentor. Like, there was no asking. I didn't ask you to mentor me. Maybe I did in some cases, but it didn't matter if you said no. I was still going to get as much time around you or as I needed. I was still going to study the moves that you made. I was still going to ask the questions that I needed to get answered. Because the conventional wisdom ain't so conventional from the way in which I grew up. And it's not so conventional when you grow up in the hood and you don't have that certain type of pedigree in your family. So check it out. Like, when you are an immigrant, you come to this country, your parents have the wherewithal to say, listen, I'm going to America to build out a better life. I'm going to seize opportunity. Like, that is something that became a part of them. So I remember being in high school, and like the Middle Eastern folks kind of stay to each other. I remember the folks that like own the store, the corner store down the street from my house. And I remember their kids and just the way in which those people worked, man. Like, they came prepared. Like, it's like they came to school with a plan. It's like they moved with purpose. You know what I mean? Like, they wasn't there to like play around and joke and chill. Like, they was, and that is, I'm painting that with a very broad brush right now, but I'm just telling you what I saw, and I'm telling you how I processed that in my teenage mind. See, what they handed down to their kids was like, nah, man, we made a sacrifice for you, and you're going to be successful. Like, even if they didn't know exactly the things that need to happen or what exactly they had to do, like, that spirit kind of guided them. You know what I mean? And I was always, like, always wondered about that. So in my situation, like, I know my parents wanted me to do well, but they had no valuable advice to give me. I have never gotten advice from my parents. Since I graduated from high school, I have not gotten any type of advice from my parents. And we just don't have that kind of relationship. Right? And it's like, at some point, like, those roles diverge. You know what I'm saying? I can't go to my mom's and be like, look, this is what's happening this semester, and I don't know what to do. She's going to look at you and be like, I don't know what to do neither. You better go talk to your counselor. Like, it's not that she didn't want to help me. It's just that she don't know nothing about it. That's like if I was working with a little girl, and she was asking me about makeup. Like, I got nothing for you. I have nothing for you. I don't even know what to tell you. What is that? No idea what, like, what is mascara? Whatever. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the instruction manual for life after high school was in German. And my parents clearly didn't read German. So, you know what I'm saying? So I had to be real aggressive. I was aggressive with how I studied. I was aggressive with the type of classes that I took. So instead of just taking a 16 units, I took 20 units, 22 units. You know what I'm saying? I maxed out on that every single time because I had to take these remedial classes and all that stuff. Like, but I knew I needed to finish in 4 years. Like, that was something that meant a lot to me. I saw people that was finishing in 5, 6 years. I couldn't do it. Then after that, got my job working as a social worker. And the one thing that I realized, as a man, I can take on cases that young ladies can't because this boy is 6'3 and he weighs
220 pounds and he has some behaviors, they're not gonna put a woman in that. So what if I took that case and I got like a robust caseload and was able to demonstrate leadership and all that stuff, and it worked out. I was able to move up in certain ranks. I was able to get a different type of experience. Like, I am the person that is always looking for the crack in the glass. The crack in the armor means that there is an opportunity to break that, and that's how I rock, man. So even in this education world, when it's like, I mean, I don't know, man. It's like folks talking about weight and this and that and the third. But it's like, nah, man, like, where's the crack in that? Where, how can I utilize all the power, everything I've worked here to get, to like help these kids right now? How do I help these families right now? Do I need to push somebody? Do I need to yell at somebody? Do I need to, like, what needs to happen? You know what I mean? Like, how do we create that change, and how do we create that change efficiently? Cause listen, like I said, man, from the place that I'm from, like, some things are just interesting. So the one thing I've had to get used to, especially in education, more so than anything else, is the way people that don't agree with you talk to you. Again, let me reiterate, I'm not a violent person. I'm not a thug. I ain't not a criminal. I've never sat in a jail cell, had handcuffs put on me, none of that stuff. But yo, check this out. When I got into education and I saw how these people were talking to folks, the level of disrespect, I don't care what you think, son. Like I'm a man first. I don't know. Hey, yo, excuse me, who you talking to? So I remember when the first time when that happened to me, oh my goodness, we were talking about something, and I think it was about charter schools or something. I don't know. Really don't care. Just because that ain't the point. Because here's the thing. I'm not here to, I don't work for a charter. I've never gone, attended a charter school. But I do feel that people should have options and choice. And you should let, I mean, I think black parents should get a chance to choose where their kids go. That's just something I believe in. It's just not going to change, right? So anyway, so this white dude, like I said, I was agnostic or something like that. Like, homie really tried to bark on me. Like, he really tried to come for my throat. And I said, I took a step back. I said, check this out. See, at that time, I had on, like, my glasses. And I was wearing my tie. And, you know, suit. I wear suits. I like suits. You know what I'm saying? And I can speak like I got some sense sometimes, right? So I said, hey, man, check this out. This is verbatim, by the way. And I don't think I wasn't at the district yet, but I was working in, I think I was at TFA. And anyway, let me just get back to the story. So I took a step back. I said, this is verbatim. Hey, man, check this out. I don't know what about me. What about something that I just said? I don't know if it's the way that I'm dressed right now. But I don't know what it is that put it in your head that you could talk to me like that. But if you ever speak to me that way again, we're going to have a real problem. I said, homie, I am an extremely hireable person. I love my job, but I'm a man first. And I can only look at these situations like, if my neighborhood was watching this moment on television right now, or if I had kids, or if my nephews were watching this moment, and I allowed you to talk to me like that, and I ain't say nothing to you, bro, I wouldn't be able to look them in the face. He was just taken aback that somebody had like had responded to that or said something to him. I got to be clear, man. Like, it was wild. Like, these people out here feel like they can talk to you any kind of way. Listen, man, I don't care how, where we are on. There's a lot of people I disagree with that I get along with. I respect everybody. But you will get your ghost hurt talking to the wrong person like that. I don't understand it. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. So when we talk about aggression, I talk about it in that way. Like, I was taught to meet aggression with aggression. That ain't always the right thing to do. I know that. I'm sure. That's fine. But you can never control how somebody's going to react to something you did or you said. I've learned that the hard way. You know what I'm saying? So I try to be as thoughtful and mindful as I can be. But I was taught to match. I was taught to meet aggression with aggression. Listen, man. When you in the jungle, you got to follow the rules of the jungle. When you in the boardroom, you got to follow the rules of the boardroom. But every now and again, every so often, you got to bring a little bit of the jungle into the boardroom. Just to see the reactions. Now, other than that, man, like, and here's the thing. Let me be clear. There are so many issues. Like, even with the people that I disagree with, probably most education, there's more things that actually unify us than that divide us. And for the most, for 99% of people, we get along fine. Fine. We see each other. Like, we pound each other up. We give each other a hug. We talk about some education stuff. We talk about the Warriors. We talk about what we have for dinner. You know what I'm saying? We disagree on that one thing. But we civil, right? Because we all live here. You know what I mean? But it's always that one. It's always that one that just feel like he just going to talk to you any kind of way. Not today, bruh. Anyway. So, that's going to make more sense in the book, hopefully. Yeah, that's the plan. Like, that should make more sense when I actually write that down. But those sections are around my lack of patience and the aggression and the way that I got there. And the way I got there was, you know, growing up, if somebody was aggressive towards you or you just sat on your hands and waited for things to come to you, it always turned out bad for you. Always. So the things that taught me how to survive, the things that grew me up, the things that raised me, basically, you know, old habits die hard, and the fact that I've had success with those things, you know what I mean, like, makes it hard for me to abandon. Now I just need to articulate that, and I'll articulate the lack of patience and the aggression more when I put pen to paper, and I'll try to do this throughout the podcast because it's helping me actually with the writing of the book. I learned this from Seth Godin. Somebody asked him something about writer's block, and he said, well, talk it out. He said, because I've heard of writer's block. I've never heard of speaker's block, meaning that it's always easier to talk about something, you know? So just something to put in your back pocket if any of you folks out there are aspiring writers or dabble that way. So, enough of my rantings and raving. Congratulations, Warriors and Oakland, for an amazing season. Y'all, you should be fine. It's a great team, you know. To everybody, welcome to the summer. I hope you all are having an amazing summer. Hope you get to connect and see some folks that you care about. This life is too short to be walking around mad at folks and having regrets. So, live your life. And with that being said, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. I'll see y'all on the other side. One.
Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue Bahama waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing. Fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people rolling dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time. Watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my.